Tonight we are continuing our unit on davar charif, which is sharp foods or spicy foods, foods that have a strong taste that we discussed have a unique set of rules in terms of absorbing other flavors. Because we say in general, there's one set of rules in terms of absorbing flavors, when a flavor is observed, is absorbed into a utensil, when we consider if it came back out of that utensil for it to be problematic or not problematic. But what we say in regards to these sharp or spicy foods is that because of the nature of the flavor, it's going to have different rules of absorption. So whereas we may not say that something that absorbs from a dairy pot, something that was cooked in a dairy pot can now the principle of not bar not applies. When it comes to sharp foods, we would say that that absorbency is going to be different. And specifically cutting the food is going to make the absorption in that specific case different from in a regular scenario. So what we're discussing tonight is, let's say you cut an onion, which is like the primary example of a davar charif, of a sharp food. Let's say you cut it with a fleishig knife. The question that we are addressing first tonight is how much of that onion becomes fleishig. So you want to remove a piece, if that's possible, in order to be able to use this onion with dairy. The question is it possible that not all of the food is affected? If you say that the entire onion has now become fleishig, then this is not an issue. But if you say that it's only part of the onion that is affected, the question is going to be, how much would you have to remove in order to remove any problematic area? So there's going to be three possible options. The first option is going to be that the entire food is affected. There is no amount that you could remove in order to make it that you could use it with the opposite type of food. The second is going to be kedei netila, which is around the size of a thumb, and it is, or around 2 to 2.5 centimeters, which is the amount that could be taken off. So netila literally means to remove. And we say that this is the amount, the size of your thumb, this is the amount that would have to be removed. The third option is kedei klipa, which is enough to be peeled. So the thinnest amount possible that could be removed, that is the amount that we say has been affected. So as long as you can remove anything at all, then you are going to have removed anything that was problematic, which was all within kedei klipa. So the Ran and the Ravid hold that kedei netila is absorbed. And then they cite the Rashba, who holds that the entire food is affected. So if we look in source number 31, this is the Ran. Katav ha-Ravid zatal, midaka'amar asura stama mashma delo sagi beklipa. So he says, removing a klipa, removing the amount of a peel, is not going to be enough. Demishum harifato veluchuto boleya ven asar yoter mikedei klipa. Because of the strength or the sharpness of its taste, veluchuto, and the fact that it is wet, boleya, it absorbs, ven asar yoter, and therefore more becomes asar mikedei klipa, from the amount that you could peel. Vitzarich netilat makom, and you would have to take out the amount of kedei netila, the amount that would be this 2.5 centimeter piece that could be removed. Vekin da'at hara'a, aval harashba katav, demilo yashi, sorry, demilo yahiv shi'ura, kediha bekishut, Kishut, garid libi piske mashma, da'agav horfe bala tova v'asur et kulo. So he says, but the Rashba writes that since it does not give a measurement like it does for a cucumber, this implies that in the case of a radish, due to its sharpness, it absorbs a lot and forbids the entire thing. So the two opinions that we see cited here are kedei netila, this small size chunk that would have to be removed, more than the amount that could be peeled, but not the entire food, or that the entire food has become fleishig. So those are the two examples that we see here between the Ran, the Ravid, and the Rashba. The Rash also offers a third opinion that the kedei klipa is affected. So the Ran and the Raivid were the ones that said Kidei Netila. The Rashba was the one that said the entire food. And now the Rush is giving us the third opinion, which is Kidei Klipa, the amount that can be peeled. So in source number 32, Tzanun Mibali Shamnunit Betochov Oser Ad Kidei Klipa. The radish that causes the residue of the knife to be absorbed inside of it and forbids it to the extent of a klipa, the amount of a thin peel. So as long as you remove that thin peel size amount, then you are okay. You can use this radish with either meat or dairy. So the Shulchan Aruch rules in accordance with the opinion of the Ra'avad and the Ra'aya that one must cut off the thickness of kidei netila around the location of the cut with the knife, which is about 2 centimeters, and then one may eat the rest of the food with the other type. The Ramah, though, rules like the Rashba that the entire food should not be used with the other type, lichatchila, and only bidi eved, if it already came in contact with the other cut, the type, may one cut off the thickness of kidei netila. So let's look in the Shulchan Aruch in source number 33. Tzanun o silka, if we have a radish or a beet, shachatchem b'sakin shel basar, that you cut with a meat knife. Ben yomo, that was used within 24 hours, o she'eno mekoneach, or that wasn't cleaned completely, asor le'achlam b'chalav ad she'yitol mimakom ha'chatach kedei netilat makom. You cannot eat from this radish or this beet along with dairy food until you have cut out kedei netilat makom, the amount that can be removed. Shehu ke'ovei etzba, which is equal to the amount of a finger, or you taste it and you no longer taste the meat taste, then you can get away with just rinsing it. So now here comes the Ramah. V'yesh omrim she'im chatach tzanun b'sakin shel iser, kulo iser. The Ramah says that if you cut a radish with a fleishig knife, kulo aser. And the same is true if you cut with a fleishig knife, asur kulo b'chalav, then you would not be able to eat the rest of it with dairy. And this is our minhag lechatchila in an ideal situation. Aval bidi eved, but after the fact, ein la'asur rak kidei netila. We only have to hold that really the asur part is kidei netila, this measurement of 2.5 centimeters that you would be able to remove. All of this is talking about if you specifically cut the radish. But if you cut the greens that are on top of the radish, this you don't have to worry about. And if you are in a place where you can only buy sliced vegetables, we have the minhag to allow what you bought by removing this netilat makom, and now assuming that whatever you bought can be used with meat or dairy. Rina, I'm going to answer your question in 1 second. The Shulchan Aruch then continues on and says, "V'im chatach bo shumin ubitzilim ukrishin, if one cuts garlic or onions or leeks, v'tamcha shekurin krin chazaret." All of these things, so onions, garlics, leeks, or other sharp foods, or fruit, or salted fish, their status is equivalent to cutting up a radish with it. So it's not just specifically talking about a radish, it's talking about all of the categories of sharp foods. And the Rama comments, "Umikol makom mutar la'achol mi." Markachot charifim shel uvdi galilim, kigun zanvil v'chayotibo, diyesh lahem kilim yuchadim l'kach, ol tol shinotan. Nevertheless, it is permitted to eat sharp spices belonging to Gentiles, such as ginger and the like, as they use special utensils for it, or they detach it by hand without a utensil. So if you are going to cut up, slice fruits or vegetables or spices, and you're going to assume that there is the potential that they were cut with a knife of one or a knife of the other, then we are able to say that in the case of spices, usually they use special utensils that are just for spices. If they're cutting up ginger, they're not going to be using that ginger then also for cutting up mangoes and berries. So therefore, We would say that usually they use a specific utensil, and even not, if not, if bidi eved, we just remove the kidei netila, that small amount, the 2.5 centimeter amount, then we can say that they can be used with meat or with dairy. Okay, Rena, what's your question?
Thanks. So for those who hold the removal of the kidei netila of whatever vegetable, so then what kind of knife do you use to cut that amount off? And then what is the status of that piece that is removed?
Okay, so you would have to use a parve knife to cut off the part that you would want to use.
And then
and
that
the status of that
if it
piece.
wasn't cut with the original. Okay.
Yeah. Yeah.
Got
So you would have to, because then you're trying to get the item back to being parve.
Got it. Thanks.
Cut it off with parve, and that piece would still go with whatever it was cut with first. Okay, so based on this, one should not cut a davar charif with a ben yomo non-kosher knife or with a ben yomo meat knife in order to eat it with dairy or vice versa, even if the knife is clean and cold. The Yalkut Yosef confirms that this is the halacha even for Sfardim who are lenient about not bar not. So even if technically we could say that because it's eino ben yomo and the idea of not bar not, when it comes to davar charif, whatever you want to eat it with is what you should really be cutting it with. So in source number 34, tzanun oselak shechatchem b'sakin shel basar ben yomo, a radish or a beet that was cut with a fleishig ben yomo knife, asor lo'ochlam b'chalav ad sheyitol mimkomo, mimakom achatach kedei netilat makom. You can't eat from that vegetable with dairy until you cut away this kedei netila, shehu ke, ke'ove etzba, which is about the size of a finger, o she'it amnu v'lo yehebo ta'am basar, or you can taste from it, sha'az mutar b'hadacha. And if it does not have the taste of meat, in which case it is permitted with rinsing. Okay, so in cases of need where one desires that the onion or the other davar charif remain pariv, but only has a meat or a dairy knife, one may kasher the knife to become pariv in the following manner described by the Shulchan Aruch. So the Shulchan Aruch describes something now, which I think a lot of people have heard possibly and think maybe it's like heebie-jeebie. It's not heebie-jeebie. So let's explain what it is. It's source number 35 in the Shulchan Aruch. Sakin yashan, if you have a knife that is old, being gadol, being katan, whether it is large or small, hanikeach maho oved kochavim, one that was taken from a non-Jew, imbal hishamesh bitzonen, if you want to then use it with a davar charif, in Inba Gomot Noatza Asarapa Amin Bakarka Kasha, you should stab it 10 times into hard, densely packed earth. Vitzarir Shekol Niitza Vinitza Tia Bakarka Kasha. And each one of these stabs has to be into separate, hard packed land. Lefichach, Loyan Otzbe Makom Shina Atzni Itza Achara. You cannot go in and out into the same place that you stabbed previously, and even to cut a davar charif with such as a radish, this is sufficient. So this is a way to kosher a knife back to pariv. What do? You have densely packed dirt. You take your knife and you stab it 10 times into the earth. Not back into the same spot over and over again. Each time, it should be into a separate place in the earth. I was actually talking to somebody about this the other day. Because people, I think that they like hear something about a knife and they think maybe that it's made up, but it's not made up. We saw it right here in the Shulchan Aruch. The idea being that dirt can actually be, especially densely packed earth, can be cleansing. That it can remove flavor, that packing it in, that stabbing it into ground, that it's essentially going to like sand down the knife, and that's going to remove some of the flavor. So the idea being that this is not some like heebie-jeebie, we're stabbing the ground, but this is really an effective way of deep cleaning the knife, bringing out the flavors, and really sanding it down so that the knife is now considered to be pariv again. Okay, let's see. We have a question in the chat. Does this method replace the process of koshering the knife? So in this situation, what we're doing here is it's an old knife that we're not sure, either we're not sure the status. But from my understanding, it's that we just want to use it with cold. If we 100% knew that a knife became not kosher, hold on one second. I was going to say that if we know it became not kosher with heat, then we would have to use heat to kosher it. Let me double check this.
I think it's to actually kosher the knife, you would have to use heat just because of the handle and all the cracks and all that kind of stuff. But it's happened to me before where I wanted to cut a piece of cheese. I wanted to cut this huge block of cheese and have a piece for Pesach. So my rabbi told me to just go like stab the knife in the ground. And what you're doing is it's kind of like a quick kosher just of the blade. So then you can like rinse your knife off, cut something, and then you're kind of good to go with that. Cut. Your cut is kosher, but the whole knife is still, because of the handle, you're not going to have the kosher.
Right. Yes. Okay. So yes, that definitely makes sense. That the idea is that this is not like a full intense koshering, but this is more to use it in that situation. Yeah, Deanna.
It's funny, but a couple weeks ago I did read about a I guess a native people, they live in a and I forgot what country, but there's very scarce water. So they use the earth to wash, actually. It's like I forgot where they are, but they actually you would think it's kind of funny putting in the dirt, but they actually do a lot of stuff and cleanse themselves, cleanse this and that with this type of earth that they have from the ground. I mean, it's odd to us, but
Right. We think of dirt as
they
making
don't
us
have a lot of
dirtier.
water. I mean, it does look more like an orangish clay mud, but it's still, that's what they use from the ground.
Right. We think of dirt as making us dirtier, but really there are aspects of the dirt, the earth, that would cleanse in certain ways. It's not going to make us look shiny and clean. But yes, there are definitely cleansing properties of the earth. Okay, so the Sefer HaKashrut cites this method of the Shulchan Aruch as well, and note that Rav Eliashiv offered an alternate method of achieving the same result without thrusting the knife in the ground. So in source number 36, B'shem HaGaon Rav Yosef Shalom Eliashiv, Shemekivan Shehanitza Tzarich Shetiyeh B'karka Beinoni, Lo kasha midai, velo raka midai, ve'in anu yodim et hashior, al ken kishetzarich niitza, yesh lenkota et hasakin hetev, velaharot alaharotchim, v'zeh b'makom haniitza. So Rav Eliashiv says that this method does work, this method of using the dirt, but because that this is not always practical, we don't always know what the right type of dirt is, we don't always know exactly how to do it. If we're in a situation where a knife requires this ni'itza, then what can we do? We can also la'arut la'harotchem. We can also pour on it boiling water. So that is going to be an alternate way to do it because the ground you're going, as he says here, you're going to need ground that's not too hard, that's not too soft, that's exactly the right way. And therefore, we also provide this alternate method, which is that you can pour boiling water on it. Okay. So now we have the question that let's say you have an onion that you cut with a fleishig knife. So now you have quote unquote a fleishig onion. After you eat from that onion, do you now have to wait 6 hours before eating dairy, or 3 hours or 1 hour, depending on your minhag? Is it now fully fleishig? Or is it just something that you couldn't eat it with dairy, but there's nothing about it that's actually in and of itself fleishig? So let's explore that a little bit. So Rabbi Akiva Eiger says that the answer is no, we don't need to wait. He bases this on a statement of the Rama that waiting is required only where one eats actual meat, but not where the food has absorbed the ta'am of meat. So in source number 37, Miwim basar basar mutar gvina. If there is a dish that is not cooked with meat itself, but rather it was only cooked in a meat pot, mutar gvina, you can eat cheese after this. So Rabbi Akiva proceeds to analyze this statement and wonders why this ruling is necessary. After all, the Shulchan Aruch allows eating parah food with dairy, even if it was cooked in a meat pot, and the Ramah allows it if dairy was already mixed into the parah food. If so, shouldn't it be obvious that one may eat dairy afterwards without waiting? Like, why did he specifically need to state this? For this reason, Rabbi Akiva Eiger interprets this statement of the Ramah as referring to a case of davar charif, and the novelty is that even in this case, one need not wait 6 hours. So he says in source number 38, La'niota ati nir alomar, afilu b'shalo chometz d'charif b'ka'ara shel basar. So he says, in this case that the Ramah is answering about, it would make sense, according to the Shulchan Aruch, and even b'dyavad, according to the Ramah, that he's not adding anything here. That if there's no actual meat, that of course you can eat dairy afterwards. Why did he have to state this specifically? And Rabbi Akiva Eiger says that this is teaching us specifically about Davar Charif. That even if davar charif was cooked in a fleshing pot, then afterwards one need not wait 6 hours. And the Sefer HaKashrus rules that indeed this is the practical halacha. So in source number 39, ha'ochal ma'achal charif shenachtach nitbashel o nechbash b'kli b'sari, av shebolei ta'am basar v'dino kim'achal b'sari, mikol makom, ein dino kibasar mamash, v'mutar la'achol acharav miyad ma'achalei chalav lelo hamtana klal. Even though we say a davar charif can absorb the fleishig taste and therefore is considered fleishig for all intents and purposes, we don't need to wait afterwards because it is not meat itself. Meidach, kishahamidubar b'charif shena'aseh chalavi, yish ma'achmirim shelo lo'ochlo b'toch she'sha'ot la'achilat b'sari, v'yish ma'kilim gambaza, v'masakin eno bat yoma, v'adai v'efshar lahakel. In the reverse case, where a davar charif becomes dairy through being cut by a dairy knife, some are stringent not to eat it within 6 hours after eating meat. So this case is slightly different, that you ate actual meat, and now it is 4 hours later, and you want to eat this onion that was cut with a dairy knife. Some people would be machmir not to eat that onion within that time frame after eating meat. But some are lenient here as well. If the knife was not ben yomo, then one may certainly be lenient. Okay. So due to all of the issues raised concerning cutting a parah food with a meat knife or a dairy knife, some poskim, such as Rav Moshe Sternbach, recommend designating specific knives as pariv in order that onions or other types of davar charif are not rendered dairy or meat in any way. So this is why we would often have a set of pariv cookware, pariv knives, so that we allow things to remain pariv and not have to always be dealing with something being one or the other and whether we are allowed to eat it with the opposite. So if you look in source number 40, this is Rav Moshe Sternbach, Sheilos HaTshuvos V'Hanhagos, Lefiza, Kidei Shaloya. So you don't make any mistakes and you don't switch things. They're Esherat Oy V'Nachon, Leishtamish L'Tanun V'Dvarim Charifim, B'Sakin Parva Dafka, that you should keep things as specifically parav to be used with Davar Charif. V'chein Meforash B'Magin Avraham, She'yesh Lizaher L'Davar Charif Shemishtamish Bo Im Chalav V'Chatchol Rak B'Sakin Parva. So this is what the Magen Avraham explicitly states as well, that one should be careful to cut a davar charif with only a pariv knife. My husband jokes, though, that everybody has three categories in their house. There's things that are fleishig, things that are dairy, there's four categories, things that were pariv and things that are pariv and things that used to be pariv and now are dairy or meat. Because it's very hard sometimes to keep things pariv, especially a mistake I used to make was when we first got married and we had our nice new sets of things, but I didn't like really necessarily anticipate everything I was going to need. So I would be like in the middle of my Shabbos cooking and all of a sudden realize that I didn't have the right size fleishig pot that I needed. So I would just, silly me, I would take my parv pot and say, it's fine. I'm just going to make this one fleishig and then I'll buy a new parv pot rather than like stopping what I was doing to figure it out. And then you end up with having no parv cookware anymore and a very confusing set of everything else because it's made up of half your fleishig set and half your parv set. So it's not mistake proof even when you make parv. But the idea is that if you have specific parv knives and cookware, that you run into less situations where you have to decide whether something is milchig or fleishig and which utensil to use. Okay, so it says specifically here, one who designates some dishes as parif should be especially careful not to use them improperly. Okay, so now we talked about the knife, and we said that it was the idea that the action of cutting itself actually impacts the transition or the transfer of flavor. That the pressure applied upon the knife is what expels the flavor from the knife, and that's what makes it that when you cut a davar charif specifically, that's when we run into problems. So the question that we are addressing now is, does the cutting surface affect the status of the davar charif? So we said the knife definitely impacts, but what about the cutting board? Is that going to make a difference with a davar charif? So if we look in the Chachmas Adam, he says that the cutting surface is indeed significant. So Vinir Eli, Deim Chatachalav Ha'arinj Ve'on Riktath Chamutim Afilu Di'eved Asor Didavcha. I don't know why I'm tripping over this tonight. Didavka b'sakina v'chorfa d'melech b'mipalit min hakli al kol panim b'makom hachatach v'af sheshamati shemekilim baza she'omrim d'zeh lo havei divachka v'loner eli klal. So it seems to me that if one cut herring and pickles on a non-kosher utensil, it is forbidden even b'di'eved, as the pressure from the knife from the cutting surface and the sharpness of the salted foods expels flavor from the utensil, at least to the place of the cut. And even though I have heard that some are lenient about this, as they say that this is not considered pressure, it does not seem correct to me at all. So if we're saying the pressure is what explicitly transfers the taste, then when you cut down with a knife, the pressure lands itself on the cutting surface. So if we're talking about flavor at that point being expelled, it definitely makes sense that whatever the cutting surface is, the flavor in there would be expelled as well, because the pressure is coming down specifically onto the cutting surface, and that's when the flavor is going to be expelled. So other Achronim, though, disagree with the Chachmatz Adam and hold that the cutting surface does not affect a davar charif at all. Therefore, if one cut an onion with a pariv knife on a dairy cutting board, the onion remains pariv. Rav Moshe Tovia Dinkel writes in his sefer called Davar Charif that Rav El Yashiv rules leniently in such a case, though he recommends trying to be stringent lichatchila. So we look in source number 42. Yesh me ha'achronim shekatfu shebechituch davar charif yesh divachka. V'lo rak l'gabei ha-sakin, ela gam l'gabei ha-talachat aleha nechtach ha-ma'achal ha-charif, yish divachka, shaharei al yedei ha-chitach nedchak ha-ma'achal ha-charif al ha-talachat, v'be'im ha-talachat b'sharit na'asit k'ma'achal l'basari, v'im hi chalavit na'asar ha-ma'achal l'chalavi, v'be'im hi shal iser na'asar ha-ma'achal. So he says, if we're talking about the pressure here, and then the pressure would definitely apply to the cutting surface, because it's when the knife meets the cutting surface that the flavor is expelled, and therefore the transfer of taste would occur. Lefichach, ra'oi l'hakpid kishachotich ma'achal charif b'sakim b'sari. You have to be careful when you cut a davar charif with a fleishig utensil. Bein shehu ben yomo, bein she'eino ben yomo. Lo yitachu al talacha chalavit. So he says you have to be careful not only about what knife you're using, but also about what cutting board you're using. If you cut with a fleishig knife on a dairy cutting board, the great poskim have taught us that we are able to be mekel, she'in la'asor et ha-kelim, that we don't need to make the kelim problematic. You don't need a kasher kelim. Afilu shneihem b'nei yomam, even if they were both b'nei yomam, v'chein ha-ma'achal eino na'asar, and also the food would not be asar. B'di'eved im nachtach b'sakim parval talach ha-chalavit o b'sarit, b'in shehi ba'yoma o b'in she'eino ba'yoma ha-sakim parva. So l'chatchila, we try not to do this, but b'di'eved, we have what to rely upon to say that if you did cut with a Benyomo or not Benyomo knife on a Benyomo or not Benyomo cutting board of a different type, dairy on meat, meat on dairy, dairy on power of on dairy, you know, any one of the combinations, that Bidi Eved, it would be okay. And nothing here would be aser. Ha'arasham, shamati Adam, so he says, really, it is appropriate to be a machmir like the Chachmas Adam, but b'di'eved, we are able to rely here on the fact that nothing becomes aser. Okay, so now we are on the last page of the unit. Other practical questions concerning Davar Charif. Another practical case that arises is when where one cut a davar charif, such as an onion, with a meat knife and then mistakenly cooked the onion with dairy. Is the entire food mixture prohibited b'di'eved? Although the issue is complex and depends on a number of different factors, Reb Chaim Jachter presents a brief summary of some of the basic opinions. So if we look at Rabbi Jachter's explanation here, as a practicing rabbi will attest, questions regarding davar charif arise very often. The first is if an onion was cut by a clean Ein o Benyomo milk knife and was subsequently cooked together with meat, do we say that this food is a forbidden mixture of meat and milk? Reb Fivel Cohen, a contemporary halachic author of the Baal de HaShulchan, cites two opinions regarding this issue. Two great achronim from the 18th century, the Chachmas Adam and the Prima Gadim, rule that this food constitutes a forbidden mixture of meat and milk and must be discarded. However, the Beis Meir rules that three lenient opinions of the Rishonim may be combined to a rule that this food is permitted. One, the opinion that only a radish has the rule of a davar charif apply to it. Two, that the rule of nap or not applies even to a davar charif. And three, that the rule of davar charif does not apply when the knife is ein o benyomo. So he says there's enough opinions that would allow you to be lenient in one aspect of this situation, that if you combine all three of those together, one should consult his rabbi to if this situation arises, that you don't need to right away say that this is going to be aser, that you can ask the question and there may be what to rely upon to say that what you made does not have to be discarded. Rabbi Jachter then deals with another common issue, that of a blender or food processor that is used to cut a davar charif. So the second case is if an onion was cut by meat or a milk knife and then subsequently placed in a parv blender, is the blender no longer considered parv? The issue is vigorously debated among the Achronim. The Magen Avraham argues that since the rule of nap or not does not apply to davar charif, then a parv utensil that cut the onion that was cut by a meat knife becomes fleishig. The Evan HaEzer disagrees, and he asserts that the parv utensils that cut an onion subsequent to it being cut with a meat knife remains parv because of nap or not. The davar charif itself is an exception to the rule of nap or not, but not a utensil that absorbed meat or milk taste. The Baal de HaShulchan rules that in a case of need, one may rule leniently, in light of the fact that some Rishonim believe that the rule of nap or not applies even to the davar charif itself. So as we see here, and throughout this lesson, all of the concepts that we learned all fit together when it comes into a practical halachic shaila. So when it comes into a question of I used my dairy knife, my dairy spoon in my fleishig pot, we're going to be running through mentally all of these components. Benyomo, eno benyomo, is there not bar not? Is there not not bar not? Are there any davar charif? Is it hot? Is it cold? And we're going to have to decide based on all of these factors how we are going to rule. And as we see that once there is a leniency in one area, once we move on to sort of the next level question, that leniency doesn't disappear and it will contribute to how we see the next level problem. So again, to wrap up, the idea of davar charif, we discussed the idea of specifically in this lesson tonight, we discussed the idea of how far into the food the flavor or the status is absorbed. Does it make the entire onion fleishig, or is it possible that you could cut away a piece in order to use that onion with dairy? We talked about whether you have to wait after eating a davar charif that was cut with a fleishig utensil, whether you have to wait before eating dairy. We talked about whether the cutting surface affects the status of the food. And lastly, we discussed two common shaylas. One is when you make a mistake and you cut a davar charif with one type of utensil and then you cook it in another type. And the other is about food processors and blenders, that once you cut an onion with a fleishig knife and then you put it into the food processor, does that then make the food processor fleishig as well? So those were all the questions. And we see that the ramifications of davar charif are widespread, that it comes up in almost all of the questions in other areas of basar v'chalav that we're going to have, because this stronger flavor is going to make everything around it sort of more stringent. So davar charif is not really something that we consider only on its own, but it really affects all the other questions that we have.